Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's like home, but it's so dark and empty. Help!
What's it mean? 11.
Friends don't play.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
She's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate pudding!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need him to hide!
Warnings are for coffee and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the number one Stranger Things podcast in the universe.
Numero uno.
And in Milky the top Way galaxy. 20 of all TV and film podcasts on Spotify currently.
Whoop whoop.
And how fucking cool is that?
So cool. Because we weren't even cracking Spotify's at all.
We only had one listener on Spotify for a long ass time.
Hi Enza.
If being in the top 20 on Spotify is cool, consider us Miles Davis.
And we're like 77% of our listeners come from iTunes. So that's saying something that we're cracking that in Spotify too. So
hell yeah.
All is to say, we're very, very pleased. We hope it continues and we've got some big plans.
More than that, we're grateful.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I wouldn't say more. I'd say no. I definitely hope it continues more than I am grateful.
More grateful.
But yeah, for sure. Super grateful. And yeah, hopefully we can keep it going post Stranger Things because we got a lot of other things that we like talking about that we want to talk about. And we're going to show that
and
off.
We're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We'll be there. Even if a podcast podcasts and no one's listening, does it make a sound?
The question, the sub answer to that or sub question to that is, but is that podcast Stranger Things or Streaming Things? Mm-hmm. What's the name of our show?
I'm sorry, so guys. Confused right now.
Yeah. I mean, we don't need
if a podcast, nobody's there to listen.
Uh-huh.
Is it really a podcast?
Uh-huh.
We don't know yet because the sub question is that podcast Streaming Things? If the answer to that is yes, this is an if, but question.
Counterpoint. How many pods could a podcast cast if a podcast couldn't cast pods
if they were Streaming Things?
Right, listener?
Yeah.
You all get it.
Anyone that's
here.
Still listening, we are again even more grateful to you. Thank you all for tuning in today. We got a very special episode. We'll get to that here in a moment. First off, as you're aware, please continue to email streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com.
Love them emails.
Yeah. You can find yes, queen. You can follow us on Twitter @streamthingpod. You can follow me on Twitter @moviesrtherapy, the letter R like toys are us.
@AndyMostDays.
That's Andy.
@SteveMay13.
That's Steve. And the podcast is on Twitter @streamthingpod. If I hadn't said that yet. Did I say that?
I believe you have.
So the podcast is on Twitter at StreamThingPod.
It is.
Okay. You can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com/streamingthings. And subscribe to the show at a variety of tiers and get some rewards. We're currently thinking about adding some rewards. So it might be a good time to get in the grassroots movement, right?
Yeah, the step on me daddy.
I'm once again asking you to please be a part of the grassroots movement.
Thank you, Bernie. Oh my God, I didn't know you were stopping in today.
I'm all about the people and the power that they have. And I hope you join them in this effort to make streaming things better.
Thank you so much, Bernie Sanders.
I'm going to get back on the public transit because I do not own a car.
That's very admirable of you and difficult where we live. I mean, typically everybody has a car around
here. I love that, dude. Lime
scooter.
Bye, Bernie.
Goodbye.
So anyway,
Where do I get a nice Reuben?
He's a huge supporter of the show, not a subscriber to the Patreon, but we understand.
We understand. He's fighting a fight.
He's, yeah.
You would think, though, crowdfunding, he'd be all about it, but.
Yeah, he's not all with his own money.
No.
He's another one of those goddamn politicians that does not put his money where his mouth is.
That's why he's.
Wouldn't you shit a brick if, like, tomorrow we get a notification from Patreon that's like Bernie Sanders supports streaming things? I'd be like, my dude.
I would. I'd be eagerly awaiting his comment on the thing. Be very curious what he thinks of that movie.
It's a classic. I love it. It's an allegory for how we shouldn't trust corporate America.
Is it?
Yep.
Is it?
That's the thing.
So today, what we're going to be discussing, we just finished watching the movie. So as you all know, The Thing is what won the Patreon poll. So that episode should be live soon on our Patreon.
It's already live, my friend.
It's out there. So yep. You can listen to our breakdown of 1982's The Thing. But a few people were sad that we didn't get to watch 1983's War Games! I thought it was coming. I got scared. And so we decided, you know what? We're going to watch that too. And we'll put it on the main feed because War Games was, I don't know when you're going to do it.
I have that clip on my soundboard, listeners. I'm just hovering my finger over it just to fuck with Chris. I have the power to have William Regal yell War Games at any moment.
So War Games was one of the biggest egos that we missed watching the volume one of Stranger Things 4. Huge influence on a couple of the scenes in the first seven episodes of season 4. And Andy had seen it, but only as a child. And yes. Steve and I had never seen the film. So we missed that ego a lot. How many emails do you think we got about the War Games egos?
Upwards of 30, more than 30. Easily.
Just specifically about the War Games.
Yeah,
so
and everyone was so nice. They're like, I don't know if you guys missed it, but it's this. And it's like, yeah, we definitely missed it.
We got one or two. You stupid fucks. How fucking dare you?
Which is weird of Steve's mom to just talk to us that way. I didn't even know she listened to the show. We need
the thank you, mom. Fucking Patreon's here for her.
Yeah, she signed her email from
shit.
Yeah, not love.
From formerly Steve's mom.
She no longer claims you.
She disowned me.
After your War Games screw up. So we decided, you know what? Screw it. We're going to watch it too. So that's what we did. That's what today's episode's about. We're going to be breaking down scene by scene-ish the movie War Games.
War Games!
From 1983. And having a good old gas of a time about it. So like before we do that though, because it is technically a Stranger Things episode because this is a Stranger Things influenced movie, we got to do our Stranger Things Mad Libs.
Oh my God, I'm not ready.
Oh my God, I didn't study.
Whether you're ready or not, it's happening. It's happening, guys. Are you ready for this week's Mad Libs, which is entitled, or which is just titled. It's not entitled to anything.
Yeah.
But it's titled fair. Mad Max.
Ooh.
All right. Who's
ready?
Who's going first?
I'll go first.
All right. I need from you, Chris, a plural noun.
Plural noun. Butterflies.
Okay. Butterflies. Person in the room.
Severus Snape. There's a statue. It counts.
It counts. And as we know, statues are people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Celebrity.
Tilda Swinton.
Adjective.
Spicy.
Number.
Two.
Adjective.
Salty.
Noun.
Dog.
Is that because Miss Penny's chewing on something over there?
She's going hard on that foot, my dude.
Oh, that's her foot?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Miss Penny, do you taste good? Yeah, you taste delicious. Are you salty?
Puppy pedicure.
I need a place.
Phone booth.
One of these days, I'm waiting for you guys to say Asgard for that prompt, and I'm going to say Asgard is a people, not a place. Adjective.
Tarnished.
Noun.
Cucumber.
Animal.
Dang, that sucks. Mm.
You already used dog.
Hamster.
Adjective.
Cumbersome.
Article of clothing, plural.
Jackets.
Vehicle.
Flying saucer.
coming in hot with a flying saucer. I love it. Now.
Built by Blair.
I would really like to come in now. I built this saucer under the shed. I've been out here for a day and a half to 3 days.
I tore apart the other flying vehicle in order to make this flying vehicle.
The tractor is fine. I didn't do anything to it. I'm definitely not making a flying saucer down here. I just want to come back inside.
I have diabetes.
Noose.
What was it?
Noose. Inspired by Blair.
Just for those in the not know, we're referring to Dr. Blair from The Thing. An episode you can listen to on patreon.com/streamingthings. Always be plugging. Verb ending in ing.
Stripping.
Color.
Red.
Adjective.
Flowery.
Flowery. What a nice way to end a nice segment, because that was the last prompt I needed. So stay tuned to the end of the episode, listener, where we will get to see what these jabronis wrote for the story, Mad Max.
I'm very excited. It's one of my very favorite characters. Let's see what we did. But for now, let's start our review and breakdown of War Games! From 1983. Again, Andy, you had seen the film before, but as a wee tot, what was your previous relationship like with the film, and what was it like overall rewatching it?
So, being the youngest of five, you know, being a Stranger Things podcast, we talk a lot about like being the 80s kids and how we grew up with this shit. The reality is that we're all like late 80s and we grew up with this stuff tangentially through older siblings and stuff. We all had older siblings. War Games was my brother's favorite movie when we were kids. So I saw it a couple of times way back when in the yesteryear, and I knew little itty bitty bits of it. Obviously not enough to catch the references that Stranger Things threw in, but enough to like have a general idea, like Ally Sheedy running around being herself and Matthew Broderick being a smart little dude and doing things with phones. That's about all I remembered. Holy fuck, this movie's really, really fucking good. It's like Spielberg level, like 80s romp, wonderful. It like, it blew my mind watching again just now how like, not just like, well, like how fitting it was for the time, like being a post Red Scare type of film, and you know, current Cold War thing. Also like the genius of using like the DEFCON levels as like an act structure. Like this is a wonderful, wonderful film. And I'm really actually kind of ashamed of myself that like, not only did I not recognize the, you know, references that popped up in Stranger Things, because that's our, you know, bread and butter, but like, this is a film that like should influence and speak to movies going forward for in perpetuity, because it is wonderful. And I had an absolute blast with it. So my relationship was nil, other than like my older brother's pretty cool and I want to be like him. And so I'm going to watch the things that he watches. But now I'm like, I want to see what this, how this shapes cinema going forward, because it had to have.
Absolutely. Steve, what was it like watching War Games for the first time, right?
Very first time. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Very first time. I honestly didn't know really anything about the movie going in. I knew it existed. I knew Matthew Broderick was in it. I knew vaguely that it had something to do with computers. But other than that, I didn't know what I was getting into when I pressed play on this. And what I ended up finding out was this was a good time. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed my time with it. It was, I think it did a really great job of balancing between making everything serious enough to where the stakes were understood. They were real stakes. You kind of understood the seriousness of the moment that all the characters found themselves in. But at the same time, it was still fun, which can be a very hard tightrope to balance. And I think this film balances it very, very well. There's a couple really, to me, completely random things that happen in this movie that are just so funny to me. Like, I don't know if they're intended to be funny, but for me, I hope they're intended, because I was cackling by myself because they were just so random.
I wish I had watched it with you, because I remember thinking like, Steve's laughing really hard right now.
Am I that easy to read? I want to know what you think I was laughing at later when we get into the review.
Oh, I will. I'm going to bring up at great length the moments that I thought Steve would laugh.
Okay, cool. But you know,
it's mostly dialogue.
Oh, there were some really funny dialogue moments. But no, it was great. I had a good time. I like Matthew Broderick a lot. Mostly my love for Matthew Broderick comes from the fact that he stars in my favorite musical ever, which is The Producers. Mm. And something like clicked when I was watching this movie, when Ali Sheedy popped up. I was like, oh my God, I never realized this until just now. But Ali Sheedy is a huge part of my young childhood in terms of like, I remember it like came wafting back to
me. Were you discovering yourself at the time?
Yeah, I just, not from this movie, obviously, because I'd never seen it, but I just remembered her character in Breakfast Club and how much I love that character and how much like, watching that as a young, like, I think I was a freshman in high school when I first watched The Breakfast Club and just being like, oh my God, I have a type from watching that movie. But, so yeah, it was great to see her in a completely different role. I kind of wish they gave her more to do because there's a couple, and we'll get into it. There's a couple of things the movie, I feel like, inherently sets up with her character and then never follows through with it in any real meaningful way. But overall, I had a fun time with it. It was, I'm glad that the listeners, kind of brought to our attention that we were missing out on this classic 80s film. But Chris, what about you?
I had a great time with it. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. And I don't even know why I say that way, because there's nothing gave me the impression that I wouldn't like it. But despite my lack of Cyndi Lauper knowledge, I spent most of my childhood steeped in 80s stuff, not music, obviously. I'm a 90s music guy, but I've watched just countless 80s films, a lot of which are trash. And I've seen dozens of times, right? I was a huge Jean-Claude Van Damme fan. I watched this weird movie called Vikings. It's like a B film. Like Conan looks at it like, ha, what are you doing? You know, that those kinds of movies is what I watched for the most part, like Tom Cruise's Legend, stuff like that. Right. And I literally had never even heard of this film until we were doing the recap for Stranger. And I'm 33. Stranger Things 4.
Never like, heard of it?
I had never heard of it.
Wow.
I looked it up from the emails and was like, Matthew Broderick, what? Like, you know, I saw the original Tron. You know, I thought I was done.
I've seen Tron. That's the pinnacle of movies.
It's a movie that has computers.
So, you know, I didn't know what to expect. And I rated it 3.5 stars today on Letterboxd. And I wish I had given it 4 based on hearing Andy talk. I think there was a few, even just scenes, but a few performances really that were pretty weak and a few scenes that were just really clunky and awkward, mostly from Matthew Broderick, I thought personally, and we'll get into that. But I thought there was a few like key emotional points where I was like, that's the take they went with, you know, it was stuff like that, but structure wise, and it was really, really engaging. Like there's a few parts of this film that were really tense. And I don't know if that was intended or not, but I was like gripping my chair. I was getting a little, cause I've been having some long COVID symptoms where I get short of breath and a little panicky. We're not going to talk about it here, but that was kicking in. I was like, this is fun. And then, it reminded me a lot.
This is fun.
Of Dr. Strangelove, probably intentionally. I think it's heavily influenced by that because there is some satirical, not as satirical, but there's some satirical-ish comedy stuff that reminds me a lot of Kubrick's film, which I also saw like a few months ago for the first time, if I'm being honest.
Love that movie.
And it's, I think we should set the stage a little bit before I do the scene by scene. I got some stuff that I looked up and I'm sure Steve did too, but just so y'all know. So like Steve mentioned, it's got Matthew Broderick, and this is a couple of years before Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So I don't know what he was in before this or where they pulled him from. I didn't do that much research, but I just know it was before he blew up for sure. And this is Ali Sheedy. This is before The Breakfast Club by a couple of years as well. So there's a lot of new folks in this before she played Allison Reynolds in Breakfast Club. And then there's a lot of really cool trivia. I don't know if you guys know how influential this movie was.
Yeah, this is a very influential movie in terms of like computers in representation in movies. Like I think it's the first movie that ever even used the word firewall.
It is. It's the first cinematic use of the term firewall.
Is that true?
It is true. Crazy. Also, this movie inspired the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of 1984. And hacking wasn't even illegal until 1990. But in like the Senate room, I don't know how government works, but like like the congressmen that were in the Congress room, they quoted this movie and I think showed the first 4 minutes of it to show the other delegates how easy it was for a citizen to use a personal computer to get into like complicated systems that they shouldn't be in. And that hence created the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So this movie was like, like politicians were watching it like, oh my God.
This played famously in the movie theater of the White House. Ronald Reagan watched this movie the day after it came out.
Was this in our trivia and I got it wrong?
This wasn't in our trivia. I did not include this in our trivia, but Ronald Reagan did see this movie when it released, and apparently as he was watching it, he turned to his, I think, chief of staff and was like, is this possible? Can they really do this? We have to tear down this system.
Yeah. a couple funny things, too. William H. Macy is in this film. I didn't recognize him or see him anywhere, but it says he's an uncredited NORAD officer. When I was looking at the cast, did not see him. This was the most expensive set ever constructed at the time. It cost $1 million to build the NORAD war room.
And it pays off in that climax with all the flashing lights and shit.
It's a great set.
It's incredible.
And so, funny thing, that set was way more cool and advanced than NORAD's room actually was. They didn't have the technology for the TVs like that at the time. Those were all like rear projections to make them look like screens that we have today.
Yeah.
And so like the director called it NORAD's wet dream or something like that, because it's like nowhere near actually that cool.
It was interesting watching that set. I think the money is well spent, because that set is amazing. Because as I was watching it, I was just kind of comparing it in my mind, like how we see NORAD in movies today. And there's something to be said about those big blocky, you know, 1980s computers that are like double deckered, you know, they come up about eye level, and then there's like a second level with more buttons that light up and you don't know what they do, but mm-hmm. they're there. There's something about that aesthetic that I just love. And then you hear the old printers like,
oh, I do too.
There was
a lot of technological nostalgia for me watching this movie, and I can't wait to get into that. The character of Falcon was actually based on Stephen Hawking, and they actually wanted him to have a cameo in the film, but he declined because he didn't want to like be made fun of. Mm-hmm. And that's what he thought was probably going
to
happen.
He was like, the Ready Player One guy had to have been based on him.
Oh, the guy that Mark Rylance plays in the film.
Yes. Yes. I can't remember the crazy dude that created the game. Oasis.
The Oasis, indeed.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Him and Simon Pegg. Really?
It's a good book.
Ready Player One? No, I've never seen it.
You would love it. It's very pop culture-y. You love Spielberg? I think you would. You love Spielberg. Okay. You're a Spielberg guy.
I do Holiday. Like Spielberg, but like modern day Spielberg is not as good as
so here's the thing.
Normal Spielberg.
Slight digression. Ready Player One gets shat on a lot. I've watched it like 6 times. It's super fun. Watchable blockbuster. It's so fun. Indeed. All right. I would watch it with you again, Steve.
It's not a great film, but it's fun.
When I was watching this movie, I thought, isn't there a game called Global Thermonuclear War that's really shitty on old computers that I used to play as a kid at like Andy's house?
You got Global Thermonuclear War?
So apparently there's not, but there was a video game based on this movie that came out in like 1984. So
what was it called?
Okay. I don't know. Maybe that.
I kept thinking that watching this, though. Like, imagine these fucking senators watching somebody playing against AI, playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, and being like, oh my fucking God, we're at war with the Russians.
Yeah, this is actual footage. They're at a terminal.
Yeah, this would, that's 100% believable, because I mean, you watch like congressional meetings today when you get some of these like geriatric senators who are like, now how does the internet work?
Dude, it's a forward thinking farce where we have all of these like congressional meetings of like, look at the violent video games that kids are playing, and this is why shootings are happening, and, blah, 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 and like, this is the reason why. Like, it's a farce to be like, they're like, the game's asking, do you want to play chess? Do you want to play poker? Do you want to play thermonuclear war? It's incredibly forward thinking of a film.
Global thermonuclear
war. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Nuclear.
Did I say nuclear?
Yeah. And my wife does too. And I remember when I was a kid, everybody mocked George Bush. Like, he's so dumb. Look at him. He's
nuclear.
He keeps saying nuclear. And now everybody around me says nuclear. And I just want to, it's not okay.
Hey, Indiana Jones said nuclear, so I'm cool with it.
That's fair. He was the coolest dude on the planet.
Right.
There's also a hacker convention called DEF CON, which is a nod to this movie, which I don't think they should all hang out together. Freeze. Apparently there's a hacker convention called DEF CON. And then lastly, perhaps the most funny thing, do you know the computer in this movie is called Whopper, WOPR?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a joke, because NORAD really had a computer that ran like war game simulations, and its name was BRGR, burger. And so them calling it Whopper awesome. Was a joke.
I like that.
And I don't know. I don't think this was. Oh, and also David's character, based on a real hacker who can neither confirm nor deny that he accidentally hacked into the U.S. government, by the name of David Scott Lewis. So that's a real person.
That's a dude that's like, somebody asked him, he definitely didn't do it. And he's like, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't confirm nor deny.
But if you'd like to come back to my place, I cannot tell you about it. Which takes away an ego that I thought I found, because the guy, the, you know, Matthew Broderick plays David, and Falker's fake name that he goes by is Robert Hume. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were trying to say David Hume, like the two of them together would be David Hume, which is a famous Scottish philosopher that I was a huge fan of in college. Mm-hmm. That was a huge leap. I don't think it's true, because David was based on a real person. But anyway, I wrote that down as well.
I did look this up for you, Chris. This War Games appears to be Matthew Broderick's second movie.
What was his first?
Max Duggan Returns.
Oh, man, that old chestnut.
And he was in the TV series Lou Grant before.
So this was, he was a relative unknown.
Yeah. He was just at the beginning of his career here.
And so the director, John Badham, if you guys don't know, he had directed before this Saturday Night Fever in 1977. Oh, shit. And he went on to direct Short Circuit after that.
I love Short Circuit.
Do you?
Yeah. Johnny number five.
No love for Saturday Night Fever.
He's still working today, but not really.
Doing the disco. Come on.
I mean, I'm glad he can dance. Those movies were never really my thing. Like, okay. Anything John Travolta, like John Travolta's original, like peak career, didn't care about.
Grease?
No, I don't care about Grease.
Oh my God, dude.
There's a reason I don't care about Grease. And you touched on it in a previous episode where it's a bunch of 40-year-old dudes pretending to be kids. Like, you got any girls for me? It's like, I'm out. I don't care. This is weird.
Good musical, man.
Interesting. He went on to direct nothing of note after Short Circuit.
Oh, no.
A bunch of subpar TV shows. I know a lot of people love Heroes. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
Okay, is the peak of Badham then.
CBS Criminal Minds. Stuff like that. Psych.
Hey, the first season of Heroes.
The show Constantine.
Psych is dope.
Oh, he did Psych?
Show 12 that makes Monkeys. Sense
because in Psych.
Arrow.
In Psych, awesome. there's like a seasonal big bad that comes back. I think it's starting in season two, they introduce this character who's like supposed to be the equivalent to that character's, you know, equivalent. Like she see, like this is a serial killer that sees him as a rival, and she is played by none other than Ally Sheedy.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's great. And she plays like an absolute crazy pants person in Psych, and she's great at it. So I think her character's name is Mr. Yang, I think.
It was funny watching this movie because I think the only thing that Stranger Things took from War Games was Susie changing the grades for Dustin. And I think that everyone else was on to something with the Eden character being Ally Sheedy's character from Breakfast Club. I now think that is true. Mm-hmm. And so it was an Ally Sheedy mix joke. But I don't know, like the whole crazy family with all the kids, that is not from War Games. And I don't know.
Yeah, because the emails we got led me to believe that that whole situation with Susie's house was like, oh, that's War Games. So when I sat down and watched, I was like, where's the house?
Yeah, where's all the kids?
Where's the kid with the bow and arrow?
Like Matthew Broderick went to his house. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see all his crazy siblings. Oh, he's an only child. Okay, all right, cool. When are we going to go see Ally Sheedy's house with all her crazy? Oh, we don't.
There is something else from Stranger Things in this. Not on purpose. It's more of a product of the times, but I can't wait to comment on it. But yeah, it's interesting that was the only real allusion to this movie was the Susie hacker stuff specifically. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess let's dive into the breakdown. You guys ready?
Yes. I'm in. Do you want me to hit the spoilers?
Sure. We're about to spoil War Games from 1983, baby.
All right. You guys ready for spoilers? Here we go.
War Games! So it starts off, there's a crazy storm, there's some government employees, and Michael Madsen!
Right?
That baby Michael Madsen!
Right.
That blew my mind. When you first get a good close-up shot of him, it's like, is that Mike? That's Michael Madsen!
It literally took me all of 30 seconds to sit up on my computer chair and be like, okay, I'm fucking ready, War Games, let's do this.
Yeah.
Didn't know he wasn't going to be in very much.
The other guy's in a bunch of stuff, too.
But I recognized him, but I couldn't place him.
Yeah, like as soon as he showed, I think he's in a bunch of like, I think he's in Commando.
All three of those first actors are like hugely prolific actors that I've seen a thousand times.
Oh, yeah.
Like the guy that lets him in too is like, hey, what's up, guys? Like he's been in a thousand things and the listeners are going to lose their minds that I don't know his name.
The roads are bad, huh?
He was in like 92 episodes of MASH. What's wrong with you? And I'm like, well, I was watching Rugrats.
Huh? I know Alan Alda.
But it's like a little bunker lab missile silo thing. There's a bunch of weed jokes. Like the one guy that we can't place is talking about his girlfriend that is singing Om Mani Padme Om to her weed plants, I think.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, you know, wacky tobacco was frowned upon back in the 1983.
The old Centimia.
Yeah, the old Centimia. And they begin launching a missile. And this is where it reminded me of Dr. Strangelove, which is probably just military protocol, but like getting the encoded message that they have to verify is real and then looking at the binders full of stuff. All that happens in Strangelove, you know, and it was really interesting. Yeah. But it's so tense. Like,
yeah, this is the first of several really tense scenes. It was beautiful
foreshadowing, though, dude. The humans coming to the conclusion, like, hey, all of this shit's about to happen. Is it? Do we need to go through with this or not? And the dude pulling the gun on him and being like, put the fucking key in, sir. And him being like, I don't know, get somebody on the phone.
Such a good role for Michael Madsen to have, too.
So, yeah. Such good foreshadowing for the way that it ends. It's beautiful.
How's it foreshadowing?
Because ultimately the computer is determining that, like, hey, no, we cannot, there's no way to win this situation. We can't, their job is to be essentially a computer. Hey, you need to press the button.
Right.
And the human element says no. And the whole conflict is the computer takes that out of the equation and says, no, I'm going to press the button no matter what, because that's
what I was ordered to do.
Yeah, that's what I was ordered to do, and that's what the situation calls for. And even the computer comes to the conclusion that, like, no, if pressing the button, nobody's going to win. And so, like, ultimately, it's kind of
better
like the bookend. Exactly. It's better not to play. Not just better not to play, but it's futile to try to kill everybody. He says, I don't want to kill however many million people without getting somebody on the phone. And the computer comes to the same conclusion. It's fucking beautiful.
I really like that scene too, for everything that you just said, because that's amazing. I love that and how tense it is. But I do love the flip flop, because when you're introduced to these two characters that we don't see really for the rest of the movie, they show up like briefly
when they're like getting kicked out,
when their jobs are being
replacing the keys with the fucking
little, like, soldering the computer into the silo launch system. Yeah,
little Nora Jr.
Like, you know, he doesn't even know what he's doing. Like, that's what I was thinking immediately. Quit soldering, sir.
That's the calculator. What are you doing with that calculator? I need that before I leave. But I love how when you first introduce these characters, I would have thought the guy that abstains from turning his key, he was giving off like, I'm the grizzled, hard-ass veteran vibe. But really, like, he's the one that was like, no, I'm not going to.
He's a softy. Michael Madsen was like, look, man, we were told to kill. Let's kill.
And I'm Michael Madsen. And as you know, I have a thing.
Yeah.
That's not protocol, sir.
Wait till Tarantino sees this movie. All right. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to be in so many more movies. So ultimately, it turns out to be like a military test, right? It cuts to NORAD. There's a big, probably overly long establishing shot of all the NORAD stuff. 22% of the soldiers failed to launch the missiles. And the general's not happy about it. And Mr. McKittrick, I think is his name. He's the kind of a...
I believe it was Mr. Blonde.
Yeah, right. Mr. McKittrick decides that he wants to install this Whopper computer system to be in charge of firing the missiles over people, because people are fallible. And this is at a time in our country's history, in the world's history, where computers were still very, very new. Nobody was relying on them for stuff like this yet, right? They just very recently replaced the Dewey Decimal System with these computers and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So definitely nobody was entrusting missile launching to this quite yet. And so it was a big thing. They decide to go for it, apparently. And this is where every time the general talks is where I pictured Steve cackling.
General Behringer.
He's such a fucking character, man.
Yeah.
Everybody, you were still watching Howdy Doody when I was learning how to launch missiles.
Those are some good boys we have in that bunker now.
Yeah.
I trust them over some newfangled machine.
Yeah.
Red blooded Americans.
Everything he says throughout this movie is fucking hilarious, like a caricature.
These colors don't run.
And that's, again, where the Dr. Strangeloviness came in, because it seemed like...
It seems like George C. Scott's character.
They were poking fun at military types, you know. He's got the cigar, all the shit. So then they decide to show the president the computers. He ultimately says, yeah, let's do it. Let's run it.
The Whopper?
Huh?
I love how it's called the Whopper. It's like Warfare Operating Protection.
I forget what the acronym stood for, but yeah. And the computers that are so fancy that he wants to show the president are so archaic. And I wrote a little smiley face by it. Like throughout this movie, like there's a scene where Matthew Broderick is looking for Dr. Stephen Faulker and he's printing a bunch of stuff. And I had forgotten that that existed. Those old printers that had the perforated paper on both sides. You had to tear off after you printed.
They made that noise. What? I love, there's that scene when McKittrick, is that how you say his name?
I wrote that down. I hope that's right.
He's given the government guy, it's when they're going to introduce them to the Whopper, but they go through a hallway that's on a second level, but there's like glass and you can kind of see down into all the computers. And he's like, all of our intelligence comes in through here and every bullet fired, every spy we have, all the information comes through here. And when you look at that room, it's like, That's an iPhone. All of that right now is an iPhone.
Yeah.
Literally.
Oh, that's what I was laughing at. Yeah.
Play it Angry Birds.
It was the room of all these giant servers that are all existing just to do what, not even an iPhone, man. Like
not even close.
Like I can't even think of a computer dumb enough to be compared to what the, you know what I mean? That exists now.
Old, like Razor phone.
It's crazy. Not like, even that.
The computer that's in your microwave is fucking more intelligent than this shit.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It knows when my popcorn's cooked.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whopper could never do that.
No.
It is absolutely fucking mind blowing. Computers, like what we have in our fucking pockets used to take up like a warehouse of computing space. Mm-hmm. It's mind blowing.
Yeah, there's literally more computational power in your phone than all of NASA had to send people to the moon.
Yep.
It's like, Mr. President, this can play Frogger. Like that. And that's
what the hell is Frogger?
My God.
That's incredible. Speaking of Frogger.
Tell Nancy to quit sucking dick. We're playing Frogger. All day. Get her in here.
So then we finally get introduced to Matthew Broderick's character, David Lightman, and he's playing Galaga in an arcade. It
takes a long time to introduce
him. It's over 20 minutes before we get to our protagonist, I think, which is really interesting. Fun fact, they sent Galaga and another one of those 80s arcade games to Matthew Broderick's house, like the actual arcade setups, like a giant machine, so he could practice. Cabinet. Yeah, the cabinet so he could practice for this movie because he'd never played him. And it's funny because
he's fascinating because there's nothing really like special about what he's doing.
He's trash. And the second time he plays Galaga, when Jessica shows up, or is it Jennifer?
Jennifer.
Jennifer Mack shows up. I'm like, he's like on the second level when he accidentally dies because she's talking to him. I'm like, bro, what are you doing, man?
There's nothing special about what he's doing.
Like, oh, damn, you owe me a quarter, you know?
And I love that kid in the first scene that we're introduced to him. And he's like, what was the boy's name? Like, hey, Billy. And he's like, hey, David. And he lets the boy like,
he's like, take over. I got to go to school.
He's late for school. And I'm like, what's that child doing?
Yeah, he's got to go to school too.
That kid has to be in school too.
Probably learning more important things. And the teacher is such a douche. He's, you know, showing everybody their bad grades in front of each other.
He's got that excellent teacher penmanship where he makes a beautiful F with a circle on it. And he's like publicly shaming everybody like, oh, you're late, you piece of shit. Here's an F.
I didn't expect Jennifer to have an F as well. And I thought that was a funny little twist. But and a savage joke that would probably have gotten him suspended.
Oh, it was a great joke.
That was a really good joke.
I wonder if the teacher was like, don't suspend him, because that was actually probably the funniest thing ever.
What was it like? Who was it that first came up with the idea of procreating without sex? And he was like, your wife. Asexual
procreation, your wife.
Yeah.
Get it? Because he didn't want to have
like
sex with you.
It's like a mild form of foreshadowing in a way, just like establishing like this computational way of thinking of like, get the job done and remove the emotional aspect of it.
What do you mean?
Asexual reproduction is do it yourself. It's not.
Oh, you think that was more foreshadowing?
Well, not necessarily foreshadowing, but like thematic. Like
thematically relevant.
Yeah.
I dig it.
I like to do it myself.
Thanks, Steve, for your
plus
addition to Andy's intellect.
His wife was an ice queen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that dude was just a douche. I don't blame her at all.
I don't blame her at all. That dude, he's got some problems.
So he gets sent to the principal's office, where we can assume he gets sent often. There's a lot of cues for that. And then he gets the password off of the inside desk of the secretary. Very unsafe. Andy's an IT guy. I'm sure you were just abhorred at the password
don't
safety.
Don't write down your password.
Don't do that.
It was a different time.
Just each one before crossed off.
It was pencil.
And the password's pencil.
That was back in the day when people were like, no one's going to break this.
Hensel. No one knew what a hacker was.
There literally wasn't hackers yet.
So it wasn't password. Not until 1990. At least.
But those had already been crossed out, probably.
Yeah, right.
Go into any website right now and try to make your password pencil. Every website would be like, no. We need an uppercase word. We need a symbol. We need at least 8 letters.
And the symbol is going to be an exclamation point.
It can't be an exclamation point. You have to have something other than an exclamation point.
You can't use personal information, pencil dick.
Yeah.
That's what the computer will say to you.
Pencil dick.
So then Jessica Mack, she rolls up on a fucking scooter or like a moped. What is that? It's a motorized bicycle of some kind.
It's a Vespa.
And she's like, hop on this hog. And he's like, all right. And they roll to his house. And then he's like, oh, let me show you something. Which is, never mind. So then he goes upstairs.
It's in my bedroom. My parents aren't home.
So she's talking about the grades and how they're going to have to do summer school is how the conversation gets there. And he shows her how he can. And this was fascinating to me because I didn't have a computer until Windows 95 era, I'm thinking. And then he's got like so much shit going on. And
there's a lot.
Puts the phone on the thingy, dials it in, matches a tone. I assume all that was possible or the government wouldn't have freaked out. So that was like an early internet thing. Which is what Susie was doing, which is why they told us to watch War Games.
Yeah.
And then he gets into the computer's mainframe or whatever, changes his grade to a C, conservative.
He wants to be subtle.
Switches hers from an F to an A.
Yeah, I thought that was going to come back at some point.
I know. I thought that was like a bad thing, but it wasn't. It was actually really cute. she doesn't want her grade changed. She's a goody two shoes. She has integrity.
Or
she
does leaves. She?
He changes it anyway. Right. And then this is where I wanted to talk about. So David Lightman, Matthew Broderick, his dad is fucking Ted.
Yeah.
To a T.
But I will say if Ted was an actual human being.
What do you mean? What?
Like this guy is as lame as Ted, but minus being shitty. Because this dude's like, yeah, I'm an old man. I'm not cool anymore. But I do generally seem to love mother people in my life.
Andy. You got anything you want to say to defend Ted?
He should have absolutely sealed those trash cans, and that's on him, and he deserves what's coming to him.
Like, I mean, if Nancy made dinner and the corn on the cob was raw, Ted would just be like, all right, I guess I'm eating this.
What'd I do to deserve this? I love how... I was making fun of him, but I also admired his butter technique, because he buttered the bread, over-buttered it.
That was genius.
And then... I masturbated the corn to get the butter.
Yeah, dude, he buttered the corn without ruining the stick of butter and without dirtying his hands. I'm going to use that from
very
now on.
Very smart.
That was a really clever way to butter an ear of corn.
Do you think Ted Wheeler does that shit? No.
No. Ted Wheeler would never come up with that.
No.
And I like how his wife was like, the mom's like, isn't it great? We get all the vitamins A and D. And he's like, can't we just cook the corn and eat pills? And I was like, yeah.
This was another one of the things where I'm like, this scene's hilarious. I don't understand why it's in this movie.
Exactly. There's a ton of this. This movie could have just as effectively been hour 49, maybe. It is an hour 49. Less. It could have been like an hour and 30. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The NORAD establishing shot.
I'm glad this is in here, but it was.
Now I know how to butter corn better.
Yeah. I learned something today.
Screenwriter was just like, the people need to know.
Look what I did last night.
I've had this trick up my sleeve my whole life, and I just need to share it.
So the next morning, they're eating breakfast, and David Lightman is looking at the magazine and sees like an ad for ProtoVision and some kind of like computer games or something like that. Decides he wants to. I didn't really get what was going on. If it was like intent, like you need to hack into this to get it, and it's like a game for just computer people that they devised, or if he just didn't want to wait, and so he decided to hack.
He didn't want to wait.
Yeah. It was like a developer ad. Like, hey, we're working on some cool shit for some games. And didn't even name any of them. He's like, I'm gonna look up the developer and find out what's up.
I think that's the other Stranger Things pull is when the boys were trying to get Susie to hack into a quote unquote Ameri Nintendo. Because this new game's coming out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that is.
That is another War Games pool. Okay. Maybe also the War Games.
War Games!
So then when he goes upstairs to his like apparatus to do this, he look at that fucking floppy disk he pulled out. It's not even I think of a floppy disk. It's the actual floppy ones. I'd only seen one of those like once when the I was a kid.
5 inches, man.
Is that what it is?
They're massive. Yeah.
Yeah, they're huge.
I don't even know why he needed that, but he put that sucker in there.
I used to play F-19.
I guess that was like...
It was a stealth fighter PC game that was on those discs way back in the day.
That game was probably awesome.
Dude, it was super trash. So there was at the time, it was incredible.
There was a Star Trek game that I played. I don't think it was on a 5-inch floppy disk, but it was so old and it was so lame that I couldn't get so bad. It was all words and stuff. It was like...
It was a text-based adventure?
Kind of. There was like a little bit of symbols and visuals, but for the most part, it was like, which planet do you want to go to? And you would type like 5, and it would be like, okay, here's what's going on. Which one do you want to do? And yeah, shit like that. And I was like, this game sucks.
It was probably...
I don't want to read.
Then
if I wanted to read, I'd go to school.
So I guess the floppy disk was some software that he had written to test the different numbers to find out which one was there. So it's going to go through all the different permutations of phone numbers at the 311 area code, which typically they would have used 555, but 311 is like 411 or whatever. So it was harmless. It's just an information
ping. It was really cool going like step by step. Like the actual like code, like theory in this is pretty spot on. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think that we already talked about how influential this film was, but watching it, I bought that all of it was real at every point. So it was really cool. So Jessica Mack shows back up, changes her mind, decides that she does want her grades changed. This is where he's at the arcade, and I wrote, he's trash at Galaga. Get good, bro.
Get good.
And then, he shows her all kinds of cool stuff, tells her that he already changed her grade. She wonders what the computer's doing. They hack into Pan Am.
This was the other scene that maybe just like, what? This is wild. At least, you know, maybe I'm overreacting to this, but this scene when he brings her back into his bedroom, I was kind of flabbergasted for half of it because half of it, Matthew Broderick goes into the bathroom and he's just talking to her from the bathroom. I'm just like, why would you do that? So that's such a strange way to block a scene when it's like, hey, girl, I'm clearly interested in and have only hung out with once before this. Can you wait here? I'm going to drop a deuce.
I'm going to go take a shit real quick.
While I'm dropping a deuce, I'm going to talk about real nerd shit.
Don't touch the keys.
Through the door. Don't check that folder. Mark taxes.
She's like, I'm going to go grab a cup of water from the glass.
That happens later. I was like,
ew. She
just drinks the bathroom water?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
the glass was in there the whole time.
He's got poop particles in it, man. And then so he books a flight for her, or at least has a reservation for her, which comes back later in a really clever way to make it look bad. He asks for smoking or non-smoking tickets, which I thought was really fun. They don't have that. You can't smoke on airplanes anymore. Interesting. And then he gets into the mystery company and just says, log on. And I don't know about the accuracy of any of this, but it was really funny to me. He's like, yeah, I can just type help. I think this is where the movie gets a little movie-ish and fantastical. No,
that's actually super duper accurate.
You can just say help.
Yeah, you can absolutely say help. And it will depending on what you're trying to do, if you're using command prompt or terminal in Apple or whatever, you can say help and it will give a list of commands, potential commands and the syntax and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's actually incredibly accurate.
Well, I guess later on when the computer's how are you feeling?
The computer says no, it doesn't offer any help. And it's ooh.
Yeah, and he has this curious bug. He has to find out what's going on. He won't give up.
That's why his friends call him Whiskers.
What's he ultimately type that gives him something? Games? And then it lists the games?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Because he doesn't get in, but he gets far enough to get really interested.
I don't remember what he initially typed.
I think he types games or list games, and it shows chess, tic-tac-toe, backgammon, and global thermonuclear war. Falcon's Maze was the first one, yeah. So then he prints out the list of games and goes to his hacker buddy, nerd friends, and that's when they talk about the backdoor, LOL, and really secretive about their methods, and they're upset that a girl's there, and the guy that's a little funny, they call him the
Nerds guy.
It's Malvin, but they call him Mr. Potato Head. Was it Revenge of the Nerds?
Isn't he from that?
That's what I thought. He's from another 80s comedy, and he's that character.
Listeners will definitely tell us.
Yeah, we'll get tons of emails, but that's what he's from. They called him Mr. Potato Head for a second, but ultimately they tell him Falcon's the key here, and you need to find as much as you can about him and then guess the backdoor password, right? That's the ultimate solution to how to get in this, which is interesting. I wonder if I guess they did, because so much of this movie is so accurate that programmers would put their own way in before they sell it to other companies, and they could be able to get in something like that at any time.
100% happened.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
That's cray.
100%.
That's cray. Dude, I feel like I wish I was born in like the late 60s and could go back in time, or at least just go back in time now and just rule shit when computers first came out, like these guys are doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like now hacking is mostly unable to be gotten away with, but really difficult. And back then it was just like,
it's all phishing. It's all
control alt delete. What'd you do? I don't know, man.
You just deleted Vermont.
You get that all the time. Like, you're a fucking wizard. It's like, no, this is actually super simple. And I just learned and you didn't. 90% of IT is I'm better at Google than you are.
Well, it's like at the end of this movie, or I guess the end of Act Two, somewhere around there, when he hacks into the payphone by unscrewing the receiver and using a piece of metal. I don't know if you can do that.
So there absolutely used to be a thing where you could play a specific tone into a payphone. It's actually referenced, at least definitely in the book of Ready Player One. I don't know about the movie, but you can absolutely play a specific tone that would essentially tell it, hey, I've received money and now I can make a call.
Yeah.
I think one of the guys that consulted on this movie used to do that to get at paying his phone bill.
Yeah, like exactly.
You would play that every
time.
Well,
that's what I guess.
You could like a specific whistle.
It was an actual whistle. It wasn't like a tone that they're using in the movie. It was an actual like physical whistle that he would just hold up to the phone and it would simulate that noise. And that's how they got away with it.
Well, that's I guess how, because she says, because it's dialing every single number to find the Protovision company. And she's like, isn't this crazy for your phone bill? And he's like, there's ways around that. That's probably what he was alluding to.
I have no idea, because the parents were like, when the Pentagon or whoever starting to call, or no, when the computer NORAD is, or Joshua is starting to call him, they're like, that's your phone ringing. I'm like, you're paying for an extra phone bill for just for him? But I don't know, like, yeah, there has to be something silly going on.
I know, when I was a kid, we all had one line, and if you wanted to be on the internet,
get off the phone,
yeah, or talk to a girl, I'd be on the phone with Chelsea for like 4 hours, and then my dad would be like, Jesus Christ, did anybody beep in? No, because eventually we did pay for two like lines you could switch between, right? Yeah. No, for sure. Definitely not. But they did. I wasn't hanging up,
but they did.
And like your shitty brother could like, you could hear mouth breathing like an hour into your conversation. Get off the phone, Andy.
He had a brother named Andy, not me.
Yeah. Different Andy. Andy wouldn't come to my house and listen to my conversations.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, he would. Yeah. We all know Andy. Into that
shit. So he decides to look for Falcon, and there's this like montage of him doing all kind of research at the library, which they do in Stranger Things when they're looking for Victor Creel stuff. There's all the, what's the machine called that you can look through old newspapers?
Microfiche.
You guys made that up.
That's an actual term. You've never heard of microfiche?
That's a reference to The Boys that I watched last night.
Oh, okay.
I haven't watched the newest episode yet, but I'm excited to.
Sorry, I didn't bring this up before, but the second moment in this movie where I was like, what the fuck is this scene? Was when Ali Sheedy comes back. Well, maybe we haven't gotten to that
yet. We're about to get there. That's the next scene. When she's jogging.
That too.
Yeah. So she's jogging and then she stops at his house. That's where she learns about Falcon.
So that's the thing. So she's she jogs to his house, which in and of itself is like, okay, she's physically fit. That'll come back later and it will be important. No. But then she.
A tiny bit in a way. She wants to swim and he can't.
But not really.
Everybody can swim except him. I can swim.
Like in no way that really affects the plot. Says,
let's ride bikes. Sorry.
But anyway, she gets into the house. His dad lets him in. And as she's going up the stairs, he's like, do you know what tumulus means? And she's like, no, I don't. That's weird. And he's like, huh, I don't know what it means either.
I got the impression he was doing a crossword puzzle.
Oh, I know what he was doing. I don't understand why that scene went on for 30 seconds more for them to have this awkward.
Everything in this movie's like that.
I don't know what that means, sir. I
liked what's dumb. And I think this is misogyny. I think this is 80s stuff. That her character doesn't do any. They're like, what would a chick be doing? I don't know. Working out.
He's going to kiss her eventually.
Yeah, for no reason, by the way. Yeah. Don't let me get there yet.
Right.
I'm going to go off on that. So then, yeah, she's jogging up. And then later when we see her, I think when he calls her for money, she's just like in this jazzercise outfit with the fluffy socks and
doing
stuff.
Doing yoga or stretching. She's stretching.
She's just about to work out, man. That's all she does is work on that bod. She's terrible at school because she's a woman, so she's got to work on that bod. Like that's the impression that the movie gave me 100%.
They gave so many hints like Ali Sheedy is physically fit. She is.
You all thought about she was going to like lift the computer up? I thought that Steve thought this was Chekhov's exercise.
I thought it was.
Throw into the ocean.
She's going to get to the bomb before it blows up.
Towards the end, when they're like, we have to get into the base.
Swim it to another country. God damn it, Steve.
No, when they're running to the base and they're like, the base is going to shut down. Be here quick. I thought she was going to be the one like, I got it. And sprints up there before all these other fucking nerds and stops the boar.
This movie was made in the 80s.
I just don't understand why you take time to set this up about this
They weren't putting any effort into her characterization at all. That's what I mean.
Tumulus means full of mounts, Steve.
Did you just Google that?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Yeah, he's just doing a crossword puzzle. I like that little touch. But so she learns all about Falcon too. There is a good joke there where he's like, he's dead. And she's like, oh, that's really sad. He doesn't look old. He looks, by the way, I don't know why she's like, he looks good. That was a weird comment to make. I felt like, I mean, it's fine, but it was just out of place. And then, but she's like,
I mean, have you seen John Wood?
Right. Damn. She's like, well, how's he dead? He looks so young. And he's like, he's 41. And she goes, oh, that is old. And I thought that was funny. His whole family died. His wife and son had died. And the son's name was Joshua, which then he gets clued in. Oh, my God, that's probably the password. Types in Joshua. It is indeed. He gets in. And I love how excited they are about the shitty game that they think is a game. And that's what reminded me of the Star Trek game and stuff. Because he's in global thermonuclear war. And it's just like, who do you want to bomb? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 or whatever, right? Or type in random countries.
She's like, what's a missile trajectory? Tory.
I
don't know.
Exactly. Why are they making her so dumb? It's trajectory. You're 17. And then he doesn't know either. What's a tragic Tory? I don't know. But he's drinking like he's on his second Coca-Cola and he's all jacked up and excited.
Tab.
Is it Tab? I'm so sorry.
Because I wrote the note. They're all hopped up on Tab.
He's like on his second Tab, like, oh my God, who should we bomb next? And she's like, I don't know. This is so exciting. And I'm like, is it?
They were freaking.
Is it though? God, if you showed them Doom, they would shit their pants. And then we cut back and forth between them and NORAD. And the guys at NORAD are freaking out because they think this is real, right? That Doom the Soviets are attacking them. And they're like, get on. And this is where I was like, Steve's fucking loving this because the general's like, get on the sack right now, smoking his little cigars and shit, taking us down to DEFCON 3, all this stuff. Right.
He does that thing that people do with cigars in movies where they like sniff the cigar, but a little too sensually.
Oh, he ran that whole 9-inch thing across the bridge. Oh, yeah.
DEFCON 5.
And then the next day, Jennifer and David are both watching the news simultaneously, and they find out that the quote unquote game they were playing was real. And it's all over the news that a simulation had been hacked into and took us to DEFCON 3. He gets really scared because he knows that they can trace the call. But somebody at NORAD
and
says,
despite that being on the news where it's like, hey, this was not definitely a fuck up. The U.S. government is still like, oh, nope, that wasn't a fuck up. We're definitely about to go to war. Right. Like the whole rest of the movie.
That is interesting.
That was the funniest thing to me about the movie is that that event got on the news. Like, yeah. I feel like the government would be like,
definitely not telling anybody about
what?
That.
What do you mean? just normal Tuesday.
Yeah, that's where the movie had a little too much faith in the government.
Super almost bombed Russia, guys.
Just here.
CNN.
Let me sniff my cigar and tell you what's happening.
We almost put our sack on Russia today. We're just going to be honest with you, news.
High five me, news. Who's up for putting sacks on Russia? Am I right?
Am I right?
The dude from CNN gets it. Bones.
He knows. He knows what I'm talking about. And then so the War Games calls back, which we know eventually that's what I wrote. But eventually it gets called Joshua. Joshua calls back and Joshua wants to play. Do you want to finish the game?
Joshua wants to play.
And that's how the FBI finds him, because they'd only tracked him to Seattle at that point. But then the connection was made again. The FBI picks him up in a classic movie FBI way. They got a van. They got a couple guys with the earbud thingies. I don't know if they didn't have earbuds yet, but. Earpieces. There we go. Is that an earpiece?
Yeah. They pick him up at a 7-Eleven.
Of course.
You know, he's getting his big Slurpee on.
He was about to get one.
That had like a third of the cup full when he had just walked out of that place. And I was like, no, unrealistic.
Rookie move. You fill that shit up.
Yeah. Right? You drink some, fill it back up.
Yeah.
Duh.
Exactly. Duh
man.
Get your little free sip on.
I wrote down dude's lame joke. I don't remember what it was or where there was a lame joke, but there was one here. Did anybody recall?
Oh, yes, I do. It's when he's given the tour. They're given the tour to some people.
Yeah.
Of the
and he presses
room,
the button.
And he gets this. He's like, now I want you to sit in the seat. And she sits in the seat. And he's like, now press that button. And she's like, this button right here. She's like, yes, ma'am. She presses. No, that button. You just nuked Russia. Gotcha, you dumbass. And they put on like the screen that's like, welcome Birmingham residents or something.
Yeah, it's like a school field trip or something like that.
And do they do that?
I read about it. They do.
Do they do that?
They do.
Interesting.
They do. Let tours go through places like that. Indeed.
Interesting.
And they press the red buttons as well.
So then they're all discussing David Lightman, Matthew Broderick's character. And it's a really funny exchange with the general. And they're all trying to paint him as like a Soviet spy. They don't want to believe that it's a high school kid that accidentally hacked into their system, which would in fact have stopped the entire movie. And he goes, it's a classic case for recruitment by the Soviets, because he's an underachieving but smart kid, all this stuff, right?
That's what? Actually really forward thinking, like as far as
I think it was current thinking, because I mean this is post McCarthyism and during the Cold War, right? So sure.
Yeah, fair.
Probably.
How are we
what
not,
are you freaking out about, Steve?
I'm freaking out because right before this scene, McKittrick, is that his name?
McKittrick,
he's walking in to join him and he's stressed out and he's talking to his secretary and then he just like spits his gum out in her hand and then she does this like,
I wrote that down.
And then she starts chomping on the gum too and it's like, what is that?
This is a man's world.
What was up with that?
Oh, that's right. I wrote secretary eats boss's gum right before the classic case for recruitment. Yeah.
I've seen that video.
That was such a glossed over thing and I was like, what the fuck?
They didn't come back like that. They were close or friends or this something, like, and that's a thing.
50 years before COVID, man.
Holy shit.
It was sophomoric misogyny.
I was four stars. I was in my apartment by myself, and I audibly like got up and started throwing my hands up,
gesticulating.
Like, what was that?
He tries to tell him Joshua called me, and then that's where the plane thing comes back, which I thought was really clever. Who are you going to Paris with? Because it looks really shady, like he's working
genius.
With someone else. He was about to leave.
Genius.
Yeah, there it's you
very,
go.
Very good. Very good pull.
Very good writing. I agree with you, Andy. Joshua is still playing the game. That's what Matthew Broderick figures out by kind of unwisely hacking into the director of NORAD's office computer. And the secretary's like, oh, my God. You spy shit.
In clear view of everyone.
Yeah. Everyone's just looking up at him like, hey, quit.
What are you doing up there?
Wikipedia.
Let me back in. I really want to come back in.
Now, I may be just a simple general, but I just have a quick question. Why is the suspect of espionage in your goddamn office?
Alone?
Unhandcuffed? I'm just going to say, this is not a good look.
Mm-mm. I'm telling the president.
I will be having a...
You know where we should move him? The place with all the drugs and the recordings. Let's put him there.
I'm just going to say it. Your new defense system sucks.
I'm not a fan.
That was his big line at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
It sucks. It sucks ass. It doesn't lick tits. Not at all.
It I'd kicks say- dick. The whopper kicks dick. All right.
And then the drawers, Andy, you're right. The more that you talk, the more I just want to go down on this movie because I think it is good. It's clever. There's
you want to go down on this
movie? Yeah, let's fucking go.
Like, there's the scene where he's locked in the room by himself.
Lift that little hood up and just go to town.
Only one of the drawers is unlocked and all of the other drawers are locked. So he like thinks for a second. He takes that drawer out and then reaches down. It's so simple, but it's stuff like that that a lot of movies nowadays, those little touches, they're one step removed from making you believe it. And you're like, why would she do that? Why would she climb up there? Whatever, right? And I just thought that was so clever. It's like, it's really smart, but it's also believable that that would happen. And it's believable that he would pick up on that pretty quickly, right? As a clever kid.
Absolutely.
So I was really pleased with that. And he pulls out the little hemostat looking things, clothes cutter thingy, whatever, medical stuff, scissors. Medical scissors, man. That's what they are.
Hey, man.
Come on, man.
You want to cut some shit? You get some scissors.
Everybody knows that. And then, and a recorder. And then even that plan, as far-fetched as it is, I really, really enjoyed that where he tricked the creepy ass sexual harassment security guard.
Oh, yeah, that was really creepy.
What's going on with this scene? Seemingly an
okay person right up and it, like he like smooths his hair back before he goes talk to the girl. It's like, okay, that's a fun like little plot thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I'm going to go hit on the girl. I'm distracted.
It turns into
sexual harassment. And yeah. It's like, yikes. Because it starts way off more accurate and I don't like it.
Yeah, it starts off where he's like, I hear you're good at tennis.
And she kind of giggles.
Yeah. And then by the end of it, he's like, you want me to leave? She's like, yeah, please. He's like, what, do you really?
What do you, Miss Fine in 1979? That was one of his lines. Did you win Miss Fine in 1979? Get it? Because Ein and Ein rhymes, Steve. Yeah, she's like audibly telling him to please leave her alone. And he's like, nah, but seriously, though, you're sexy. And it's super weird. And it's just in the background.
Let me get in your personal bubble.
And then he uses that to trick the guy to open the door again and has like the tape recorder mimic the tones. And he's able to whatever. Sure. I don't know how that shit works. I believed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like phones back in the day, the pressing the buttons were a specific tone. And
Tones was what was actually making stuff happen.
Exactly. Yes.
That's why I just thought it was something to keep you interested while you were dialing numbers. You know what I mean?
To keep you interested.
Because you get fucking bored. There's seven of them things.
Oh, honey, I was going to call your mother, but there's a real boring-ass tone. So I gave up.
It was the same tone every time. I never make it past the fifth number.
It weren't no bop.
It was there to entertain you.
Not entertain, but I just thought... I thought it was an aesthetic choice. You know?
Oh yeah, that's what nine sounds like.
There's like a dude that's like,
like on Tally's like, that's the tune to Funkatown.
This is my artistic vision.
Remember what?
When people dial, they're gonna hear
Well, did that noise have a purpose?
Yeah.
What the fuck was that noise's purpose?
Same thing.
The same thing? It's a tonal like signaler thingy? Absolutely. That's what fax machines are doing?
Yeah, dude, it's all DSL internet. You're sending ones and zeros through the telephone.
Zeros
and ones.
This is blowing my mind that those aren't all random noises. You just
thought there was like a proto Skrillex coming up with that shit just to play when you're trying to access.
I just don't know how stuff works, man. He had
binary a thought about it.
I see what you did there.
It's blowing my mind that somebody figured this stuff out.
Dude, humankind is amazing.
Aren't we all lucky? Like right now through the podcast.
The podcast, yeah.
There's like waves happening.
Mm-hmm.
Electric things. There's ones,
signals,
zeros. There's probably tones.
Literally capturing estimates of our vocal waves and recreating them in digital format. It's incredible.
And then even war games. That's possible.
War games!
That's incredible. Anyway, he ends up sneaking out with the tour, which again was really cool. It was like Chekhov's tour. I really dug the writing.
He didn't just get out from under the little vent. He was like, oop, nope, can't go. Oop, nope, can't go yet.
Yeah, and he could see people walking down. Like and
it
stuff.
Felt realistic.
And then there was kind of a jump scare when the guy caught him, but he just thought he was a lingering tour person. He didn't catch him,
That dude was a dick. I'm just going to say
He was way too.
Hey, motherfucker. I see you're 15 feet behind the other tour people.
What the fuck?
You kids think you can do anything?
fucking lingerers, man.
I'm going to stick my foot so far up your ass.
Well, I mean, it's a high security military installation, so I guess.
I know that lady just pressed the red button, but you got
to
go.
Yeah, we only got one button. We programmed to be funny.
Yeah, I love the people in this room have two modes. It's either ha ha ha, joke button, and get the fuck out.
So he does sneak out with the tour. He has no dime for the payphone, and so he hacks it. And now he's in Colorado. Is that what he said eventually?
Yes.
And he's to fly to Oregon.
They were going to take him to Denver.
So, also he ended up, wait, what?
They said that they were going to take him to Denver.
Yeah. Oh, so they were in Colorado somewhere else and Denver was the next place they were going to take him.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. So they drove him all the way from Seattle to Colorado to talk to the, is that where NORAD is? And everybody that's going to email me knows that?
I probably, in this movie, at least.
Probably. I'm sorry in advance. I didn't know. I don't know where all our government installations are. I didn't memorize that. So he hacks the phone, which again, I thought was super cool. And then I wrote, why is Jennifer always exercising? So I had the same thought as Steve. She got big socks. That was the thing in the 80s. What were those socks for?
Yeah.
Were they like sweatbands for the feet?
Yeah, make you sweat. Compression? You used to frequently wear little weights on your legs. Like, so if you're jogging and stuff, that it would burn more calories.
Yeah.
That was a big thing in the 80s.
Sure. And big socks.
Yeah. Big socks to hold the big weights, my dude.
So the main NORAD center is in Alaska, but there is a Cheyenne Mountain complex in Colorado.
Thanks for that research, Steve. Quick on the button there, friend.
You're welcome.
You're a gentleman and a scholar.
I'm probably on a watch list now because I just searched, where is NORAD?
Where do the Supreme Court justices live?
They cut back to NORAD, and one of my favorite Steve lines in the show happens because they're convinced the Soviets are attacking again for some reason. Definitely not a simulation this time. And the guy leans over to the other little computer clerk, and he says, I just hope they don't make, or he's like, you ready for vodka, son? And because meaning the Soviets are coming. And he's like, absolutely, sir. I just hope they don't make me eat none of them damn fish eggs. What?
That's also actually kind of really good, like just writing to establish, like, you have to assume it's not a simulation. And like, that's what they did at the very beginning of the movie.
Sure.
So even though like,
yeah, because that was a simulation. All
this shit's going on. They're like, no, like they are attacking and we have
every to time this happens, they have to respond that way. That's what they're trained to do, because it could be and millions of lives are American lives, no less.
Yep. American.
That's more important.
God damn it.
So then he flies to Oregon with her money, Jessica's money. That's why he called her. And then she's there. So she flew as well.
No, he went to the airport and then she just drove there.
Yeah. So she met him at the airport where he was going to pick up his tickets to fly.
And she drove instead.
Yeah. It was like a three hour drive. So like a fucking 20 minute flight.
Yeah. He's like, damn, you're really, really costing lives here, potentially, over wanting to join me on this.
I love this is just another aspect of them doing Ally Sheedy dirty, where she shows up and she's like, are you in trouble, David? What's wrong? Did they find out about what you did to my grade?
Is this because you changed my grade?
Yeah.
I actually really like that joke, and it doesn't paint her in the smartest light, but I thought it was a really funny joke. And then they have this like semi-serious talk on the ferry, and then out of nowhere they kiss for no reason. There was no like,
no, she kisses him on the cheek here. Like there was the awkward, like he puts his hand like on the back of her neck underneath her hair, like they're about to kiss. And then she goes in for the cheek smooch. But the real kiss happens after the tic-tac later.
Tic-tac.
Tic-tac-toe.
Tic-tac-toe.
You know, instead of saying tic-tac-toe, you just say tic-tac.
No, they kiss on the lips on the ferry.
No, it's on the cheek on the ferry. Andy's right.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just confused because I wrote they kiss and I was really mad.
There was like,
and I never wrote another kiss note. So I'm just like, I must have not been paying very close attention at this point.
You just got uncomfortable with the forced sexuality between these two.
Yeah, because
characters.
They hadn't built enough at that point at all.
I mean, it's moot because it's basically a kiss because he, like Andy said, he puts his hand on her face and she gets the cheek and like, it's like, okay, well, at that point.
Sure. Yeah. I just think it wasn't earned. Yeah. I'm with you, Andy.
The ferry scene was weird, too, because they board the ferry during.
And this is one of the times where Matthew Broderick gets like, oh, I just don't know, man. Like, it's just crazy. And
you
all.
Don't even believe me.
And it's, yeah. And it's like, it's not working for me. And I know he's a really good actor. So I'm just like,
she's like, I've literally been here the whole time.
But anyway, go on.
The ferry shots are weird because they board the ferry during the day. They do the cheek kiss. Now it's sunset. And then they get across the lake and it's daytime again.
Well, they wanted the kiss to be on a sunset.
Yeah. Well, I know why they did. It's just funny that they're like, we don't need to film them arriving on sunset.
It's like
no one cares.
The beach scene where they play football in Top Gun Maverick. And it's either sunrise or sunset. And that makes no sense because when does this class start and when does it end? Right. But I get it. They just wanted, that's a beautiful time to be on the beach playing football
for a movie. Baby.
Yeah. You got to get that golden hour in.
Golden hour, baby.
And then, so they finally find Stephen Falcon, which I guess I didn't allude to earlier in the film.
They don't find Stephen Falcon. They find a goddamn pterodactyl, Chris.
No, dude, that's
which
so
again,
cool.
As someone who's never seen this movie before, when the pterodactyl flies by, at first I'm like, is that a, wait, hold on.
Is that a sequel?
What is this movie going on? And then it's like, okay, I think that's a fake one. And then
I know you thought maybe it was a real dinosaur issue.
The first time it swooped into frame, I was like, is that a goddamn pterodactyl? And then they show it swooping across again. I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
You need to say that like the general would say it. Is that a goddamn pterodactyl?
Is that a goddamn pterodactyl?
Pterodactyl?
A pterodon?
Because that's what he would
terror of the skies.
Did you know that a pterodactyl actually didn't exist?
Yeah.
God, that's disappointing.
I know, right?
One of the best dinosaurs.
Did you know that dinosaurs likely had feathers?
Oh, for sure.
Fuck, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
I knew that. I did not know about the pterodactyl.
Yeah, pterodactyl, I forget what happened.
I think brontosauruses are also not real.
Yeah, also, number two, cool. If they take away the triceratops, I'm fucking losing it,
bro. That's my favorite dinosaur.
Exactly.
I'll lose my goddamn mind. I'm going to pull a Pluto on them and be like, you know what? No, that's a planet.
Triceratops, they're safe.
Okay.
We got the skulls, baby.
Skulls, baby.
We got the skulls.
There weren't no pterodactyl skulls this whole time.
They had put a couple bird things together and thought, eh.
See, a lot of times what happens is they get like part of a head, part of a vertebrae, part of a tail, and they're like, new dinosaur. And then years later, they find more pieces. That's why the Spinosaurus in Jurassic Park 3
this looks was a badger.
The way it does is because they only had like 13% of that skeleton
now, Steve,
discovered.
You're assuming I've seen Jurassic Park 3?
And now, modern day, they're like, oh no, the Spinosaurus looked more like a crocodile with a giant fin. And it didn't look, because they found more of the bones and they can confirm. Sorry.
No, so that's the problem with science.
It's
iterative and they just need to say what's up.
Don't jump the bones.
It's cool. The Earth is the center of the universe, and I'm sticking to it.
Andy, we're always learning.
Mm-hmm. Then it goes to DEFCON 2.
For some reason, this episode, we're going really close into Ted Lasso constantly.
Because the damn general and all these NORAD guys, they go to DEFCON 2, and Falcon is a nihilist. He's like, you know what? I already knew, and this is where I was kind of zoning out, looking at IMDb trivia and stuff. But he seems to give he already knew all of this was going on, and he was like,
yeah, cool. He makes some sort of aside like, I thought it was funny that you targeted Seattle.
Exactly. That's what threw me off. I was like, did I miss something here?
Yeah, this was inevitable.
Las Vegas.
Well, you see, he points out both.
Well, what Las Vegas, he says, like biblical ending for them, right?
Yeah.
Because they're like a city of sin. It's kind of like a Sodom and Gomorrah reference.
So don't worry, I've thought this through. The first one of the first hit points is 3 miles from us. So we're going to get incinerated immediately. It's everyone who survives this that's going to have
that is like
wandering blind.
The likely targets in the event of a nuclear attack, like, for example, us being real close to GM, we would likely be targeted. Sorry about that. And that's actually a real thing and pretty clever writing to.
I'm saying where
they would establish him.
From his character point of view, like, he's literally just like, I'm hammering home that he was just so okay with this.
And
yeah, we're cool. Don't worry. We'll die real quick. And it's fascinating. And I know
he went on the opposite end of the spectrum of nobody wins. And he's like, nobody wins, therefore everybody loses.
Right.
And it's beautiful. I think, like, as far as like establishing, like, coming to terms with the futility of nuclear warfare.
Because he lost his wife and child.
Yes, exactly. Like, if everything can disappear in the blink of an eye for no reason whatsoever, why not everybody, you know?
Yeah. And I liked his obsession with dinosaurs, like, hammering that home even further because they're extinct, right? And he's like, life finds a way. And Jeff Goldblum pops out of nowhere.
And they had no say in that. It just happened to them. Like, yeah, that's why he's obsessed with dinosaurs. It's just like they were the apex predators of our world. And all of a sudden they weren't by no fault of their own.
No big deal. Anyone who fires nuclear weapons is basically the end of the human race, right? Because of all the responses would just end everything.
Yeah.
And they knew that from day one, and they know that in this movie, and that's what the whole movie's about. And I didn't see that coming. I think it's really interesting. But I didn't know how do you... Falcon's turns a little weird because he's like, all right, I'm going to bed. And then they leave and he comes right back down. And he's like, you know what? Now that they're gone, I just feel like I should save the world. They did say something about his son early on, but that's not, didn't seem to have any effect.
I didn't think they'd really leave.
Yeah. Damn, they're going to sleep on the floor? Uh-huh. Guys.
I made popcorn.
What the hell? I thought we were going to play backgammon. I assume he likes games. That's why he programmed Joshua to like games.
Yeah.
Anywho,
you got Settlers of Catan.
He also said, I assume it'll be bees that take over after humans are gone. And that was kind of a sad thing because bees are almost gone now.
Sweet yeah. summer child.
It's like, oh man. And there's a really cool line that he says, nature knows when to give up. And I thought that was cool. I just wrote that down. And then is of course the tic-tac-toe analogy. You can't actually win if you're not, unless you're playing with somebody really stupid, which is, he didn't say that, but that's my own experience with tic-tac-toe. You can win. It's just, you have to play with your four-year-old or something. Ha! Gotcha.
Got him, idiot. You had X, you didn't go in the center, you fucking idiot.
I like how the computer puts X in the center every single time because it's like, what else would you do? By the way, fun tidbit, I read this too. Apparently, even the dumbest computer you can imagine and even like way worse than what they had in 1982, there's so few permutations and possibilities with tic-tac-toe that it would have figured out that it was futile in seconds. So they had to like make it a little more dramatic because it would have run through all possible situations in a couple of seconds. Like,
yeah, it's dumb. Nine spaces, yeah.
Oh, this is dumb.
Never mind, we're good.
They had to trump it up a little bit. And then we find out that David can't swim because they were looking for a boat. And she's like, oh, swim the 3 miles that we need, you know. And I like how she says,
this is my moment. And he's like, no.
You grew up in Seattle and you can't swim? I was like, I know Seattle's a coastal city, but isn't it kind of cold up there most of the time?
Yeah, is that a thing for Seattle residents?
I like that it was in Seattle, though, because it's the technological capital of the country, right?
So Starbucks.
Kind of makes sense that he would be like an early adopter of computer stuff. Needle.
It came from space.
It did.
And then
that space needle.
That's when Falcon shows up with the chopper and they really milk the chopper tension.
Oh my God. And like, I feel like the DP had been so fucking pissed about all the footage that they got of that because it's just like blown out lights the entire time.
Yeah, you know just like searchlights.
Flashlights on Matthew Broderick and Ally Sheedy and then like pan up to the helicopter, but like they just didn't like adjust the.
They wouldn't need to film it at all. They just. The make ADR the noise, you know, Foley the noise in and show the lights because ultimately it's a night shot of a helicopter. So yeah, it wasn't.
Cameraman's like, this looks fucking awesome. Editor's like, this is all we have.
This is trash, buddy. I did the best I could. And things escalate very quickly. They're like all of a sudden racing to the NORAD base in a Jeep and all kinds of shit. The Jeep wrecks trying to get through the gate. Another fun trivia bit. That was an accident. The Jeep was not supposed to wreck.
Oh, it looked like it.
It looked great.
Yeah, that was an absolute accident. It was supposed to drive right through the gate. And they just used that take like, shit, everybody okay? All right, that was cool.
All right, we need coverage of you recovering from that accident. Let's go.
And then
don't touch it. Don't touch the vehicle. We have to use this still.
My notes get sporadic because not a lot like happens plot wise, technically. But it just says Joshua won't stop. And then I have your new defense system sucks as my note.
Joshua won't stop trying to play games. Right. He's like, let's play chess. No, let's play poker. No. And then he's
that's not what I meant. I think Joshua won't stop was in reference to what's his name? Falker couldn't stop him from firing the missiles.
Oh, yeah.
Like they successfully figure out that they believe them that it's a game and the Soviets aren't really attacking.
Yeah.
But then it gets another layer of conflict because Joshua won't stop. And now he's going to play his side of the game where he actually does have missiles.
Matthew Broderick with Joshua. That's like the one name that sticks in your brain throughout the whole movie. It's like everybody's named Joshua at this point.
Yeah. We're all a bunch of Joshuas.
These goddamn your fucking computer.
I love the line. And again, another Steve moment where, it's a little unbelievable, but I dug it that this kid that they were chasing as a Soviet spy is still definitely just a kid, though. And they're like, Oh, let's let the kid figure it out on the computer. You know what I mean?
That's Ali Sheedy's the one that's like, let him do it. Yeah. Like, okay, Ali Sheedy.
Okay, also kid. Hey, that's
that,
cool.
Hey, that girl works out a bunch. We should listen to her.
And then
she got big glutes.
And then they look at the general, like, hey, should we let the kid get on the computer? And he says, I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it would help.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's he's got a point there.
Well, sir, it I would
shouldn't
not.
Be here.
Right. So then it all ends up in a game of tic-tac-toe. I thought chess was going to work because they originally wanted to play chess at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. He types chess and it's like, bah. I was like, oh, shit, what the hell? And ultimately, he what plot line is this like where you get a computer to like short itself out in a loop? This has happened in a movie sense where they like they make a computer solve an impossible problem until it shorts itself.
It's happened in several movies, but none of them are coming to me right now.
Yeah, all I'm thinking of right now is Dormammu. I've come to bargain.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
And that's what if he's Dormammu? I've come.
Dormammu, let's play tic tac toe.
Ooh, that would really fuck Dormammu up. I want to be X this time. And then the only winning move is not to play, which is of course overtly about nuclear war.
How about a game of chess?
Wonderful ending.
That's so good. What a weird game. The only winning move is not to play. How about a game of chess? That's so good.
That was the computer's words, damn
cheating
it.
Cheating bitch.
And then Kurt Russell pours bourbon onto it.
Yeah.
That was also a The Thing reference. You can find that at patreon.com/streamingthings.
I did like...
And then he kisses her randomly...
I like a good end of movie kiss, but the fairy stuff was just completely out of place. God damn it.
I do have a couple notes for in the scene there. I really like the line. This is before Joshua kind of takes over everything else when they're trying to like, oh, is this actual simulation or not? Where Falcon tells the general, you know, it's a machine. You don't act like you act like a person. Don't act like a machine. Like
that was
I like
a cool
that.
Speech. Yeah.
And I love the mirth overall when they realize that it was just simulation and like it cuts to the, like when it first happens, Matthew Broderick is the first one to go, oh, right. Yeah. And yeah. Then other people start cheering and then it cuts to the general who's like, all right. He like does the same line delivery.
This is what I'm doing as
then
well.
Everybody's like, yeah,
I'm hip too. And then during the final scene, when Joshua's running through the tic-tac-toe and all the lights are going bananas and they're cutting up the shots of people
that's
with lights
so cool,
flying
though.
Up. And then they would show the scene, they're the screens of like the different simulations that are happening constantly. There's one shot that made me laugh because it's so dramatic. Like everyone's like, oh, what's happening? Oh, the screen. Oh, what's happening? Oh, the screen. And it cuts to a screen and just what appears to be just a dude just cat the you know, nonchalantly walks across the screen like he's not panicked. It's just a dude like, well, I'm going to go hit the donuts because Cheryl brought them and I'm going to get those before everyone else gets a chance. And it was just such a funny like so much tension. And then there goes Doug.
I did have a doctor's appointment. I let my boss know.
You guys have fun. I gotta go get my wisdom teeth pulled.
Can we unlock the vault door things?
Oh, damn, we're on lockdown.
What's the DEFCON?
I gotta call Dr. Shannon. I don't know.
God damn it, Steve. Yeah, that's all you come up with.
That harkens back the don't be a machine, be a human or whatever. That harkens back to the beginning of the film that we were talked about earlier, like the foreshadowing that I said, where the people are like, hey, this is our job. We're supposed to press the button. And they're like, no, that's beautiful. It's obviously like wonderful anti-war, like call it propaganda if you want, but obviously a very well-established theme that they set from the moment the movie started and paid off beautifully. Honestly, I think that the writing in this film is phenomenal. Like really, really, really good.
Yeah, it's really tight script stuff. Like David,
except for what they did with Ali Sheedy.
David kept stuff, except for, yeah, the underdeveloped Ali Sheedy character, for sure. I also thought it was interesting. I don't know too much about where cinema was at this time. I know that it was not the first like cyber movie, right? Or cyber paranoia movie, but this is a couple of years before Terminator. And the huge theme of that is that we made a huge mistake trusting the machines with so much. And now it's the end of the world. Right. So I just thought that was interesting. You know, there was obviously that this was in the beginning ishness of computers are new. We're scared about what could happen. Yeah. And so I don't know how I think this movie influenced a lot of stuff is what I'm trying to say. We already talked about the real world practical implications that this movie had. But I think, as Andy alluded to early on, I think that a lot of cinema was influenced by this movie as well. And again, I just hadn't even heard of it. And it was not on my radar at all.
Well, now you will never forget the movie that was
War Games. I never, ever will. Thank you so much to all of our listeners that berated us about this film and caused us to watch it. In addition, even though it did not win the poll, we were like, you know what? We haven't seen it. Let's watch it. We love movies.
Honestly, I was expecting this to win the poll. So
that was I think part of it too. So stay tuned. We're going to create a new Patreon poll here soon. But again, this is on the main feed. If you'd like stuff like this, we do a lot more of this over on the Patreon, and there'll be a lot more of that in the future. So consider checking that out. And is there anything else we want to say about War Games?
Well, not about War Games. Do you have anything about War Games?
Just want to say I love you guys.
Oh, I love you, man. But hey, this is the last quote unquote Stranger Things pod episode to release before
Stranger Things
Volume 2 comes out on Friday. There will be a Crossing stream that releases Wednesday. This was going to be going up on Monday. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just real quick, this is our last kind of real kind of time to kind of come together and talk about Stranger Things beforehand. Do we have anything to say about that before Volume 2 drops this week?
You didn't prep me, man.
I just want to say that I can't wait.
Yeah, we're so super stoked for it. We got tons of good emails that I'm going to be responding to all weekend. But no, I have no other predictions or thoughts that are just going to make me sound dumb anyway. I'm just so hyped for Volume 2.
More War Games references, please.
Potentially, yeah. And I'll get them this time. I'm prepared.
For sure, we'll all get them.
I do want to go through my 1986 this was 83, so a little late on that one, Duffers, but try to catch some more movies that might be coming up. Mm-hmm. I am surprised that they haven't brought Sneakers into this, the Robert Redford movie.
Yeah.
And a couple of other big ones that I do expect them to use at some point soon. So we'll find out.
Time will tell.
Time will indeed tell.
You know, war were the games we made along the way.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But before we go, we have to finish and find out what kind of Mad Lib we created with Mad Max.
That is true.
The Mad Max Mad Lib.
Are you guys ready to hear the story you helped me craft on the Mad Libs?
So ready.
All right. This is the Mad Libs titled Mad Max. Up until a few butterflies ago, Mike, Severus Snape, Dustin, and Tilda Swinton thought they ruled the arcade.
What a crew.
Can you imagine rolling up with Tilda Swinton and Severus Snape?
Mike Wheelong.
Mike 390.
Mike Wheelong.
You know, they thought they ruled the arcade, guys. That was until Spicy Max came to town.
Oh, I don't like it.
Now she holds the highest score. 2 points to be exact. In some of Dustin's top
games. Golf.
So, this Max must be a salty nerd then, right? Wrong. She's the new dog at Hawkins Middle Phone Booth. Max moved all the way from tarnished California to Hawkins with her cucumber of a stepbrother, Billy.
Oh, my God. Delete!
And is definitely a hamster out of water in this small town. Billy may easily attract the popular crowd with his cumbersome looks, tight jackets, and cool flying saucer.
Yeah, that kind of worked.
But Max prefers to lie low, sticking to her wheels of choice, a skate noose.
Oh,
you can,
Jesus Christ.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God, guys. You can catch her stripping around town. Red hair blowing in the wind and riding solo. If you're reading this, Lucas and Dustin, solo is the flowery word. Stalkers. Oh boy. That was certainly one of our Mad Libs we've done.
I don't like it. I was not a fan of that one.
Real sorry, guys.
Ooh. That's all the time we have for right now. We look forward to talking to you very, very soon. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things.
Happy streaming. Chris.
Yes.
Well, you know what time it is.
Is it patron time?
It is patron time. And he's yelling from the bathroom, much like Matthew Broderick does in War Games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're here to thank the patrons. They are so kind enough to give us monies.
Thank you.
We need to thank Phil, Carmelita, Carrie, Enza.
Thank you.
Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Katie, Jimmy, Sarah, E. Lopez.
Thank you.
Kyle, Tomas, Shay. Thank you, Stephen the Fifth, A. Wells, Danielle, Kimberly, Andrew, Rockin' Robin. I just added the Rockin'.
Thank you, Rockin' Robin.
Rockin', but I like the term Rockin' Robin. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Ashley, Jade, Mindy, David. I hope you're not David from War Games. Mm-mm. Jocelyn, Amelia, Katharina, John, Jared, Orion, Jacob, Reese, Marcuse, 1850. We settled on that's how we're going to pronounce it now. Marcuse, 1850. Thank you. Mike, Lady Pris, Cody, Gavin, Casey, Cryptoholic,
Cryptoholic,
AJ, Hannah, Joel, Tyler, Jessica, the Reed family, Katarina,
whoop whoop, Reed family, what up?
Carlo, Adam, Jeanette, Andy, not the one on the show though, Sandra,
different one,
Emily, Aaron B, Aaron A, Amanda, and Glenn. Thank you guys so much. That's a lot of names.
Thank you so much, everyone. We love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.